From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
So I was in the lift today, would you believe it?
Oh, yes.
At my work.
I can believe you weren't taking the stairs.
I'm on the seventh floor, Garth.
Oh, okay, sorry.
So I'm in the lift going out for my coffee break, and there's a guy in the lift with me, and he's got a PAX 2014 t-shirt.
Snap.
And I said, hey, nice t-shirt. He was a bearded guy, a bit large. No, I wasn't looking in the mirror. And he said, oh, yeah, did you go? And I said, yeah, I went to PAX 2014. In fact, a friend and I were on a panel when he sort of, you know, did the double take.
You are a god.
And he said, oh, how come? And I said, oh, some friends and I, we do this board game podcast. And he said, what's it called? And I just looked at him, didn't say a word, turned round and showed him the back of my hoodie because I'm wearing my Dice Men Cometh hoodie.
Merchandise. It's the moment you were born for.
Absolutely. I've been waiting 18 months to do that. Speaking of the Dice Men Cometh, that is who we are. Here on Edge Radio with episode 126 on the 21st of July with Mark.
And Garth.
And Trent. And
Garth.
Yeah, and this week we are going to be talking about something we talked about a couple of episodes ago because, let's face it guys, sometimes we need to move on. And we will be rehashing what we've been playing 2 weeks ago? 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
That no one heard except for maybe Mark. We are then going to follow that up with talking about the Spiel and the Kennish Spiel, because they were both announced over the last couple of days, and the winners are there, and of course, we all have our opinions on that. We will then do our Kickstarter update, because there is a hell of a lot for you to be spending your money on. And then Trent's done something half-assed about something to do with games and the fact that he refuses teach us a game.
You're hassling me again already.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you've got 10 minutes to talk about
it. What?
And why you are refusing to make time to teach us a game.
I'm too busy.
All that and more on The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3.
Such a beautiful tune from a man whose last living sounds on this earth were...
Wow.
Tasteless? Too soon?
Too soon. Too soon.
Jimi Hendrix.
Anyway, on a much happier note, one of the things that... we did do 2 episodes ago, but no one heard, is gave a shout out to 2 very special people because way back in ancient history when we went to BorderCon 2016 all those months ago, we played a game of Falling Sky, not Skies, with Adam and Tim. However, Adam's children realised that we are podcast celebrities.
Famous.
And the fact that their father had spent some time with us and even got to look us in the eyes while they talked to him.
Did he recognise you by your hoodie?
I just wear Dice Men underpants.
Ooh.
But anyway, I just wanted to make sure that we gave a shout out to Aiden and Rosa, Adam's children, who we did do a shout out for 2 weeks ago, but the episode is lost to posterity. And yes, when we do get a chance to meet these 2 kids, I will personally... happily play a game of Monza with them.
And me too. Hello, Aiden and Rosa. Hope you are well.
So there is a little bit of deja vu going on here because one of our episodes from Edge Radio has been eaten by internet gremlins. Coincidentally, that was... that episode featured a bit of chat about a game that's been nominated for the Fielder's Yaris, which is the Academy Award of German Board Gaming. And the winner of the Fielder's Yaris has been announced... just last weekend.
Yes.
Which went to Vlad Hvatl's Codenames.
Yes.
A game which has been huge in our hobby over the last year.
Yeah.
Probably more huger than Imhotep, which is what you're going to talk about again.
Yes, that's right. For the first time for people listening, but for the second time for us here in the studio, we're just going to tell you a little bit about Imhotep, and then we're going to have a bit of a general chat about the Spiel des Jahres and the Kennish Spiel. So Imhotep, designed by an Aussie.
Oi, oi, oi.
Phil Walker Harding. Art by Miguel Coimbra and Michaela Kindley, and published by Cosmos. Now, the English version has only just come out, but of course the German version came out, and that's why it was able to be nominated. One of the three Spiel des Jahres nominees. Now, Imhotep was an Egyptian polymath, also known as Renaissance man, but of course way before the Renaissance. He served under the third dynasty king Djoser as chancellor to the pharaoh and high priest of the sun god Ra at Heliopolis, and he is considered to be the earliest known architect, engineer and physician in history. He could do it all. He was also one of the only commoners ever to be accorded divine status after death. And in fact, the location of Imhotep's self-constructed tomb was well hidden and in fact remains unknown to this date. Now, of course, when we hear the name Imhotep or Imhotep, of course, what we think of is...
Brendan Fraser.
Billy Zane.
That's right. The Mummy, which was a 1999 remake of the 1932 Boris Karloff famous monster horror movie. It was in that set of films with The Werewolf, Frankenstein, Mummy. I think there was also The Thing from the Black Lagoon.
I don't think it was Billy Zane, was it?
Let me do some research.
Okay, and interestingly enough, though, The Mummy is due for another remake.
Yes.
Because Universal Studios is trying to, you know, kickstart that whole shared monster universe again, a la the Marvel universe,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
And so they think they can do it with The Mummy, etc.
Yeah, now, when we're talking about Imhotep, we're not talking about The Mummy, of course. We're talking about this amazing builder now. He is said to have designed the Pyramid of Djoser, which is a step pyramid at Saqqara in Egypt, built between 2630 and 2611 BC, and he's also responsible for having the first known use of stone columns to support a building. Now, as an aside, I rode a camel from the Great Pyramids at Giza to the Step Pyramid at Saqqara for 3 hours. That's longer than it takes, a lot longer than it takes to play this game. And according to some famous people, including Sir William Osler, Imhotep was the real father of medicine because he's the first physician to stand out clearly from the mists of antiquity.
There you go. All of that sounds really interesting.
It does,
doesn't
it? How
do you play him?
Okay, so Imhotep, the architect and builder, we're going to build pyramids and other stone structures in ancient Egypt. We're going to ship stone blocks to various edifices. And, of course, we're going to score some victory points. Now, this game lasts for 6 rounds. And what you're doing is you have a new set of ship cards at the start of every round, which have different number of little spots on them because you can ship a different number of stones. What you can do in each round is you can get some new stones. You have a little sled with stones and you can have a maximum of 5. You can get 3 new stones. You can move one of your stones from your sled to one of the spots on the ship. And the ships have 2, 3, or 4 spots. You can sail a ship once it gets filled to a certain level, not completely full, but it has a minimum level that has to be filled before you can ship it, and you get to pick where it gets shipped, or you can play a market card, which is like a special action. Now, where do you ship these ships?
That's a really good stones? Question. Yeah.
So firstly, 1 of 5 spots. You can ship to the market, where you're basically just trading stone for a card that lets you do some special stuff. Could give you a special action, could give you some bonus points at the end of the round. You can ship, of course, where everyone wants to ship, to the pyramid. And you can actually build a pyramid. And this is one of the things that I love about this game. You've got great big chunky wooden cubes, and you actually build a pyramid. So you've got a base of 9 cubes, then a second level of 4 cubes, and then one pointy bit on the top, but it's still square.
And this is one of those things that, from a tactile part, I just love the size of these cubes. They are about 4 times the size of a regulation little resource cube on the vast majority of games, but it makes it such a more tactile experience. I really love that aspect of it.
Couldn't they have made, like, shaved one side of the cube off a little bit and actually made it into a proper Pyramid?
No.
And not Mark one of the will, early step
Mark will tell you why.
That's right.
Really?
Something to do with the other actions that you can
That's
do.
That's right. Really? Because not only are you shipping your stones, and just before I go on, I want to point out, you've got four players. Four players can play this game. You've got four different colours of cubes, but they're not blue, red, yellow, and green. They're black, white, beigey, stony colour, and grey. So the stones actually look like stones, which is another really deft touch in this game that makes it seem a lot better than what you think it is initially when you think, oh, you're just moving cubes around.
Makes it seem better than what it is.
No, no, I didn't say that. So another place you can ship stones is the temple. So you basically just make a row, and then when you fill that row, you start making another row. But how you score the temple, so I didn't mention stones in the pyramid, each different spot in the pyramid, you get different points, and it's on a little chart. And you get them as you place them. Stones in the temple get scored at the end of the round, remembering there's four rounds in the game. And you score looking down from above. So once you start to build the second row, of course, some of the stones in the bottom row get covered over. So this very tricky little thing of, you know, trying to cover over other people's stones while not having your stones covered. The fourth place you can put stones is in the Grabkammer.
Really?
Or burial chamber, where you're placing them column by column, top to bottom, left to right, and you're getting points for orthogonal connectivity.
You're orthogonal.
Or in other words, stones next to other stones of the same colour, but not diagonally, just across and down.
Diagonally?
Yeah, yeah. Didn't I ever tell you that story of how I used to go to an aerobics class many years ago, and the aerobics instructor would say, "Front! Back! Diagonally!" And the friend and I that would be at the back of the aerobics class, because we were the only guys there, would just fall off our aerobic steps, because step was very big in the 80s, and laugh.
Well, I'd occasionally diagonal in aerobics if I wasn't wearing the right shorts, but please continue.
Okay, and the last place you can put your stones is to build an obelisk. Not relating to Asterix and Obelix, because that's a completely different game. But you build obelisks. How do you build an obelisk?
Up.
It's so easy. You just stack cubes on top of each other. So you have this lovely element where the stones are actually growing into structures right before your eyes. Isn't that wonderful?
It is. I really like that as well. And it makes it a lot of a race mechanic, because you need to race to have the tallest, because if you've got two equally tall obelisks at the end, they share the points, and no one wants to share points. They're all my points. I want all the points.
Now, look, another fascinating thing about this game is that each of these areas is basically a big cardboard card, and they have an A and a B side. So the A side is the thing I've described, but the B side is different. So you have the B side of the obelisk, for example, is lots of little obelisks, only three high. The B side of the pyramid is four or five little pyramids. And so you get this variety that you can have, which gives, of course, lots of replayability.
Yeah, kind of like the wonders in Seven Wonders, I guess. Yeah. They've got a couple of different ways that you can
make
them.
Exactly right. And there's a pyramid in those.
There is indeed. Now, what I like about this game is that even though this is a very simple game that probably plays in about half an hour or so, and you've been able to
describe the whole thing in a few minutes, yeah,
the decisions that you have to make on every turn are relatively quick, but they are very, very important, because most people, when you play this, think that, oh, one of the biggest decisions I have to make is getting my stones out onto the right ships. Now, one of the interesting decisions you get to make about that is whereabouts on the ship that you put your stones, because, you know, as the gamer, you always go, well, I want to be first. However, you don't necessarily want to be first, because the stones will come off the ship in the same order in which they came on. But then you go, oh, but I want to be able to control where my stones go, and I don't want Trent to be able to move that ship that's got two of my stones on it to the obelisk, because my obelisk is tiny compared to his. So I want to be able to control that.
There are so many double entendres that I could do right now.
Well, I'm very glad that you don't. What I just like the fact that even the simple action of replenishing your quarry and getting three extra stones that you've got feels like a bit of a wasted move, but it certainly isn't, because we were lucky enough to be taught this game by David Harding, Phil's brother, and it was very apparent that you didn't want to end your last turn not having stones in your quarry.
That's right. And not only that, though, but you will often make the choice to ship a ship of stones where you don't even have any stones on that ship because you want to make sure it goes to someplace that's not as useful.
Correct.
And that was one of the twists in this game for me was I played twice at Bordercon, once with three players and once with four players. And you, with both of those numbers of players, you have the same ship cards. And so you have the ships that have two, three, and four spots. So obviously with three players, you got a better chance of getting a stone onto a ship. With four players, the ships ship really quickly.
They do.
And so sometimes you have to make that decision of, will I get a stone on there, or will I risk not getting a stone on there, but send this ship off to a what is perhaps a less valuable spot, maybe to the temple because it's not happening, or the burial chamber because there's no orthogonality there at the moment. I found that decision quite fascinating, tricky. It gave you a lot to think about. So, look, I just want to cut to the chase and say I think it's a beautiful game. It's beautiful because it's simplicity to teach and to play. It's beautiful from an aesthetic point of view with the big cubes, the bright colours, the artwork is really nice. And to me, I could certainly see why it was a Spiel des Jahres nominee. It really had that great feel of a fun family game with some decisions, with a little bit of depth, with where you have strategy and tactics. It has a great level of player interaction because you are making those decisions about what ship's going where, what ship am I going on, whereabouts with the ships. So your decisions do have some weight, but at the same time, you don't have to overthink it. So in my mind, Imhotep stands for, in my humble opinion, excellent, Phil.
Wow. Now, the thing is, this game is still pretty hard to come by in English because the first English edition only came out about a month ago.
Mm.
So I would certainly recommend that if this sounds like the kind of game that you like, that you want to go on and probably have to still pre-order it through most of the Australian game distributors. But yeah, I really had a lot of fun with this. The tactile nature of it was great. The ease of explanation, the fact that you could quite easily play this with relatively young players is awesome. And it's just good, clean Egyptian fun.
And a quick shout out to Arnold Vosloo, who played Imhotep in the Mummy films most recently. Not Billy Zane. That's two men who are bald. Garth?
And actors.
Right.
Okay, we're going to come back and talk about the other Spiel des Jahres nominees, the winner, what our thoughts are, and lots of more fascinating stuff. Paul Weller and the Style Council with a stone's throw away on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Now, of course, you don't want to throw your stones away when you're playing Imhotep. And I tell you what, I don't think German game designers or German game companies throw anything away.
You're a diangle.
Would you believe that the prototype edition of Imhotep, it was called Builders of Egypt, won second place in a game design award in 2010. It was a little competition run by Studio Giochi, an Italian game studio, called the Premio Archimede Board Game Competition. It came second in 2010, and it's taken 6 years for it to come out. I bet you can't guess, Trent and Garth, what came third in that competition.
No, I can't.
Cacao! Phil Walker Harding's other game, Cacao, that was on the recommended list for the Spiel des Jahres in 2015.
Ended up coming out before Imhotep.
Absolutely right. But it did amaze me, and we did have a chat to David Harding at Bordercon about the fact that they basically had this game as a done deal. They made very few changes, Cosmos, for almost 6 years before they released it. So whether it was they had another Egyptian title came out, their production lines were full. Who knows? They obviously had a lot of good reasons. But 6 years. They had it for, which I found fascinating. And I've got to stop saying fascinating.
That's your, become your new verbal crutch after we outlawed the word interesting.
That's right.
Hey, did you find... I mean, look, given that Phil Walker-Harding is kicking around for 6 years waiting for a game to come out, what's his full-time job?
Well, it's game designer now.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, obviously, Sushi Go, he's just had Sushi Go Party come out, just released a new version of Archaeology, the card game.
Yep. With else? Cacao.
Oh, he's had Cacao. He's been doing expansions for that.
Yeah.
You know, and
he's
he actually...
Boy.
Did you see the photo of him on Twitter?
Yeah, yeah.
With the big red pawn at the Spiel des Jahres Awards.
The big red what?
Pawn.
Right.
Which is the symbol of the awards, and they had a man in a big red pawn suit.
What?
P-A-W-N.
Okay.
So Spiel des Jahres, obviously, as we said, it's like the Academy Awards of Games, except that it has a very European or a very German focus.
And a very commercial focus. Well...
Oh, are we going to go there again?
Yeah, we might call it commercial, and we have certainly in the past. I guess it's an award that's all about getting German families out into game shops and actually buying stuff.
Yes,
isn't it?
So they look at games that will sell well.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that have some commercial appeal, yeah. Absolutely. And look good sitting on the shelf, look good on a table.
Mass appeal is a better way to say it, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously what has mass appeal in Germany is far different to what has mass appeal here in Australia or the US or Europe or other parts of Europe apart from Germany, obviously. Now let's look at the other two nominees. So we'll talk about Codenames in a minute, which we've already said that was the winner. Kahuna.
No.
Now, Trent.
Karuba.
Why do I call it Kahuna? That's because of this great Kahuna sitting in front of me.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Karuba.
By Rüdiger Dorn.
Yeah.
Yes. And which we talked about last week.
You did. That's right. When I wasn't here.
Yeah. Were you listening? Because Trent and Leon certainly weren't.
I did listen for some of it, that's for sure, as much as I could handle. So, again, a relatively simple game, but looks good on the table, has the ability to change it up. I think Trent referred to it as Jungle Bingo.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. But, again, it has that mass appeal. You know, it has that simple tile-laying mechanics, but enough decisions in it to keep you guessing, to have you comfortable with playing it more than once at least.
Yeah, again, it has heaps and heaps of replayability. And, yeah, I just think it ticks a lot of the boxes. So after your very expert sort of breakdown on the Spiel and the jury of a couple of weeks ago, I can understand why, having played it, it was a nominee because it was justly deserved.
Yeah, and look, I did find with Imhotep, I found I really enjoyed it. And that initially had me thinking that as far as the Spiel des Jahres goes, potentially that's a bad thing for Imhotep because maybe there's a little bit more of a game in there than the jury would like. Now, I don't know if that is so much the case, but I did find because of those decisions and the fact that you have to think about it a little bit, and it could be a little bit cutthroat, that maybe that was just slightly off the mark for your average friendly German family.
Well, the thing that is bugging me about this is that both Imhotep and Karuba are actually games, as opposed to Codenames, which is really just more of a kind of fun activity, isn't it? I mean, it's not really... Look, I've played it, I enjoyed myself, but I wouldn't say it was a game per se.
Well, it is the number one party game ever,
is
according to people who voted on Board Game Geek. So, I mean, there's certainly an element where it is a lot of fun. It is, you get it to the table, you can teach it in 30 seconds. No one ever will play this game one time.
I was going to say, it definitely has that appeal of, let's go again. And I mean, I know the first few times that we played it, we would play it four or five or six times in a row. And
yeah.
Even though we are the seasoned gamers that we are, we had that much fun with it. And I also know I played it with some friends of mine that hadn't played games at all before, threw this down on the table, explained it in 5 minutes. The whole sort of spy-y, Cold War type thing completely went over their head, you know, the theme of it. But as soon as they saw it in action, it was like, You know, one turn, bang. Oh, yeah, that's it. That's easy. And again, at the end of the round, they said, let's go again. Let's go again. And we played it three or four times. Mm. So it has masses of mass appeal.
Yes, and it is cheap and it is readily accessible. And it will be, again, mass distributed everywhere again. And I think that just leads to hundreds of thousands of sales, these awards. So, look, it will continue to be a cash cow for Czech Games Editions for a long time to come, especially with Codenames Pictures just coming out. Mm-hmm. So, look, you look at those, and I don't think there was a huge amount of doubt that it was certainly the front runner to win this award.
And look, I think also massive hats off to Vlada Chvátal, who has had so many hits, most of them, we must say, on the heavier side. And this is his second party game. He had the Bunny Moose Moose, which not a lot of people know about, which is, again, is sort of like a party-type, charades-type fun game.
He also did a kind of Pictionary thing. Domania? Name escapes me right now. But look, I hope... Yeah, look, Codenames, sure, it's hugely successful, even more so after it's won this award. I hope it does become a cash cow for him, so he can actually knuckle down and give us some bloody decent games instead.
Well, talking... Maybe switching tack to the Kenner Spiel Award, because this is where, for me, I think the nominees were very different from the normal German games.
Yeah.
And then the winner was also an option that I would have put third in a three-horse race. So the three nominees were Time Stories, Pandemic Legacy, Season 1, and then Isle of Sky from King.
Yeah, everybody said Pandemic Legacy.
Exactly right, I'm in that group as well. And the fact that, drumroll please, Isle of Sky ended up winning was, I think, a pretty amazing result, given the fact that something like Codenames, which is such a commercial success, won, to then go and have Pandemic Legacy and Time Stories, both of which have been very commercially successful, not win over Isle of Sky. That wasn't something I was going to pick.
Well, but was it though, Garth? Because when you look at it at face value and you say, yes, this is Pandemic Legacy, it's taken the game world by storm. Although I guess it's hard to tell whether it's taken the German game world by storm. Time Stories, this amazing innovative thing, the like of which we haven't really seen at all before. Mm-hmm. And then Isle of Sky, which is a classic German-style game.
Even down to the cover, which just has a guy with facial hair playing
looking into
bagpipes.
The distance.
Is that what he's playing bagpipes?
Yeah, he's Scottish.
Yes. Right. You know, I think really, really, like, they've gone the tried-and-true path. And not only that, but Pelican and Pfister, who won with Broom Service last year... Two in a row, back to back.
Which is an amazing achievement.
Pelican and Pfister took the double. I was really surprised because I don't know that anyone in either the Kenner Spiel or the Spiel have taken a double before.
No, which is, again, just a credit to obviously the period in their game design, which is just everything's turning up really, really well for them. They know what to do and they're obviously an awesome duo.
So it's a double Pelican and a double Pfister.
Okay.
You're off, Agnell.
Yeah, right. So, and we talked about Isle of Sky, our very first episode back from BorderCon. Yeah. We played it on the first night. We really enjoyed it. But, you know, I think as we said during that discussion, when we played it, we were even a little bit confused because we thought initially, well, maybe it was just me, that it was Spiel des Jahres and not Kenner Spiel because it didn't really have much complexity in it. It was sort of a little bit like Carcassonne and a little bit.
Yeah.
Carcassonne 1.5.
Yeah, that's right, because the rule book was maybe 6 pages.
I thought it was like four, well, maybe.
Three
an
double-sided
open...
pages. Yeah. And we were able to go from opening the box to learning the game to playing the game to me very horribly losing the game all within about 45 minutes. So this was a very quick, very easy game to play. It does have a high level of replayability with the scoring tile variations all the time. And it's got the catch-up mechanic, which, you know, it's arguable whether that's good or not from the perspective of someone who's coming first versus the perspective of me who's been last the whole time.
It wasn't enough for you to catch up, Garth, that's for sure.
You know what I think? I think this whole Kennerspiel thing is Brexit.
Okay.
Yeah. I think this is the Germans throwing the Scots a bone on the Isle of Skye, saying, out of the UK, guys. Come back over here to the Eurozone, where the action's at. Come on, we got board games up the wazoo.
When we did argue in our little Kennerspiel segment we did, I think maybe even in that show with the Isle of Skye, that, you know, if you look at the jury's criteria, well, Pandemic Legacy can't get it because it's literally just one game, albeit that it extends over up to 24 nights, and Time Stories is literally just one game.
Yeah.
And if you want to get any more than the two or three runs out of it, which, again, is really just counts as one game, you've got to then buy expansions. And
you're buying a system rather than a
game. Yeah. So if you look at those two things, really, they almost excluded themselves, even though obviously by being nominees it meant they weren't excluded.
Exactly.
But if you look at the way, the things that the jury look at, it made it very hard, I think, to choose either of those two games. So I'd be interested to know whether that did push them towards Isle of Skye.
Oh, look, frankly, I've given up trying to make any sense of these awards each year. They seem to throw up something bizarre each time. It's almost like they just make it up.
Wow. There you go. You heard it here first, guys. Well, the SDJ jury just flips a coin, a three-sided coin, and makes it up.
Well, for me, I think we continue to see, I mean, we've had, I don't want to say the dumbing down of the spiel because it's at quite a low level anyway.
Mm.
But I think over the years, we have seen the dumbing down of the Kennerspiel. You know, if you look at, was it Agricola very early on in the day? Some of those quite complicated games to now Isle of Skye, Seven Wonders,
mm-hmm.
those sort of games. I mean, they're barely a step above the spiel. When are they going to...
You're not bagging Seven Wonders, are you?
No, but I'm saying it's not a complicated game.
Oh,
I mean, Kenner, the literal translation of the Kenner spiel is like the Noah's game.
Sure.
So the people who know games. Now, we know games, but how many times are we pulling out your Seven Wonders, your Isle of Skies, those sort of simple games? When are we going to have the Kenner spiel that's going to have some deep complexity, where we can have our Robinson Crusoes or our Panamaxes or our, now I'm not going to say Scythe, or our Galarus or those sort of games.
I refute your assertion that Seven Wonders is a simplistic game. I think you need to dial back in your head where we were at in the hobby at that point in time. I think it was quite innovative for its time, and I think the card drafting mechanic and there's deep strategy to the game.
But
I've certainly always found it very challenging. Long time listeners to the show will know.
Yeah, but I think if you look at where this award has gone, it's gone south from that. It's gone to more simple games.
Certainly this year.
Yeah, well, the fact that you've got something like Blood Rage, which is admittedly a beautiful minis game, but the overall gameplay itself is not particularly deep. I think that lends itself to the criteria that this might be getting a little bit simplified. But anyway,
enough rabbiting on, yeah. I say. We're going to come back and rabbit on some more after this. To the window, the watcher
can... Butterfly Effect, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. The Dice Man Cometh, Trent, Mark and Garth. As we prepare to kickstart a segment about Kickstarter, the crowdsourcing website so popular with gamers, for those of us especially who enjoy throwing money into an enormous internet pit and waiting for the sound of an echo, sometimes waiting for years. High Frontiers, anybody else back that one? Or the prop set to the Masks of Nyarlathotep?
No.
Nope. Just me. Okay, fine.
What's that other RPG that you're waiting on?
I'm waiting for the Oi Bike Bell.
Okay.
And, I forget. I've got
Paranoia. Aren't you waiting on Paranoia?
I am waiting on Paranoia.
Yeah, you really have a habit of backing the wrong things, don't you?
What can I say? Kickstart my heart, Garth.
Wow, there you go. Mark, thank you very much. Now, just before we get to a Kickstarter update, I just wanted to say I got a Kickstarter delivered last week, so that was great, and it was an Australian Kickstarter. It was No Fish or Get Hooked by 93 Made Games, which is essentially Go Fish mixed in with the Hanabi mechanic.
Okay.
So that everyone else is looking at your cards, but you are not. And my kids and I, because this is a very much a kids game, have played it about a bajillion times in the last week. So they love this game.
So you stopped catching Zubats long enough to play a real game.
Don't mention
I can multitask.
Don't mention the
so
Zubats.
So I just wanted to say thank you very much, 93 Made Games, for delivering that product. It looks great. It feels very nice. The card stock is good. And ultimately, the market you were going for, which is children. I have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. Love this game. I went to local game store, Area 52, yesterday. I had to buy one of these little plastic card holders.
Yeah.
Because my daughter, Annika, couldn't hold all the cards, so that now she can do that. And it's fantastic. She loves it. So that's my little thank you, 93 Made Games.
I bet Aiden and Rosa can hold all the cards when
I
they
bet
play
they
games.
Probably could too. Let me go on to stuff that you can now back on Kickstarter. And I wanted to start with a game that I have almost backed. I'm hoping that one of you two will. Leon, you're listening, so you can back it as well. But it's called Martians, A Story of Civilization. Now, this is by Red Int Games, and it's out of Poland. It is, not surprisingly, a game about colonizing Mars. Now, this is very much a semi-co-op, semi-traitor, part competitive, part co-op. You're trying to all build bases, gather resources. It looks really quite fascinating. It looks like it should...
Are you sure you're not underselling it there?
No, but it looks really, really nice. And the fact that this has smashed past, it's on almost $140,000. It got its $30,000 goal in 2 hours. It's by some designers who've had a bit of success previously in Poland.
What were their names, Gar?
Their names are... thank you very much, Mark. They're Gregor Olinsky.
Don't even...
And Christoph Wolicki.
Hello.
Yeah, so they have a bit of pedigree. And just to make sure that you're aware, Mark, the minis do look really nice for the Martian space bases. So it's got about 11 days to go. The price itself is pretty reasonable. It's only about 45 to 50 US dollars. Shipping is quite reasonable because they're doing shipping through a distributor, which is very, very handy. And I think that you will find this is going to be one of those games where it starts a lot of other Martian games. Because...
Does it bill itself as being sort of scientifically accurate? Like it's Arthur C. Clarke. It's not...
Matt Damon.
Right.
Yeah, well, the most accuracy I can give you is that they did do a poll with three potential colours of red that they were going to use for the board.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, they went to a vote, and the board that had the most votes, that's the colour red that the board is going to be.
Yeah, so it's Arthur C. Clarke, not Val Kilmer.
No.
Mars.
And
okay, I'm going to be all over this.
It does have the look and feel of the Civilization computer game and the Civilization board game, that building up your civilization. But instead of ancients, obviously, you're explorers.
Yeah, and look, it looks like it should be a lot of fun. I've not seen any of the reviews, so I'm only going by what I've read. It's one of those things that I've kept in my eye for the last couple of weeks or
reminds,
so.
Reminds me of those Kim Stanley Robinson Mars
books.
I love that space exploration
and
stuff.
And I think you said it's going to lead to a renaissance of games about Mars. Like, didn't I see there's already another one about to come out or just come out? Mars, the new red planet that's not missing
Red Planet? First Martians, Adventures on the Red Planet,
which
is essentially Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
Ah, yes, that's
so it's the Robinson Crusoe with integrated app support, where the app is essentially an evolving storyline. Right. So rather than having the various card stories that are in Robinson Crusoe, it's all done through the app, so you've got that extended play that way.
Wow, that sounds...
So that's going to be coming out in not too distant future.
Is that Ignace A. Trevicek as well?
I think it is, actually. It's certainly by the same publisher. So
Portal Games.
Yeah, so that's going to be good. Now, moving on to a game that is continual and with a story, I wanted to talk about Near and Far.
Oh, yeah, this looks great.
Does it ever. Now, this is by Ryan Locat, who is the designer and also the artist on one of our hits of Bordercon, which was Above and Below.
Mm.
So he's really extended himself with the title here and gone near and far. I'm presuming the trilogy will be left and right, but who knows? So this is taking what he learnt from Above and Below, and it's essentially making it into one long story. So you'll be able to play a campaign of this over, I think he's saying, 10 consecutive games. But the storybook that's going to be in this game is about 3 to 4 times larger than the storybook that is in Above and Below. And where Above and Below had potential options that you could take when you delve down into the cave,
yes,
this will have that as well. But it will also then have a story about the consequence of your actions so that you'll be able to do a little bit more RPG. So it takes that, you know, Tales of the Arabian Nights mechanic that Above and Below already did really, really well. It takes the beautiful art that Ryan did, and it just looks glorious when it's on the table.
Yeah, because we did say when we were playing that, you know, if you look at Tales of the Arabian Nights, 3,000 paragraphs in that storybook, and I think in Above and Below there was 200, 250 paragraphs. So, you know, a lot less, but still some really great stories. I'm really excited by this. So is it standalone, Garth? Like, yeah. I know it says it's a sequel.
No, it is a standalone. What you can get if you back at the right level is also some upgraded components and expansions for Above and Below as well.
Yeah.
You cannot buy the base game Above and Below there. They just say, we want to support retailers, so yes, please go to your local game shop, which is great.
That's a nice move.
Yeah, but you are able to get those bonuses. And look, if you order, you get the metal coins. I also like the fact that some of the stretch goals are they vary the play style. So you don't just have to play the campaign mode. You can play it as what they call arcade, which is essentially a one-shot. You can play a couple of different scenarios and call it the mini-quest. And all of that, they're the stretch goals. And look, it was going for $25,000. It's been going for a little bit, let's just say a week. It's got $220,000. So this is funding and funding big time. The only concern I have is that you're not going to be seeing this game until at least mid-next year, which is a shame. But we will be seeing it, because within about a minute and a half of me putting a little secret Facebook chat to you guys saying, here's Ryan's follow-up, Leon had already backed it. So thank you very much, Leon, from all of us. And look, I think this would be the closest thing to an insta-back for me, because based on my experience with Above and Below, I think this is a no-brainer. So I would strongly, strongly recommend checking that out. The next one, Trent, for you, because you are such a fan of all things horrible and gory, Evil Dead 2, the official board game.
I've had a look at this.
Yeah, doesn't it look...
looks like crap.
Exactly right. So you are clearly in the minority because over 4,000 backers have spent $300,000+ backing this game purely because of the intellectual property, I dare say, because it is some miniatures, because this game, having read the incredibly thin rulebook, looks absolutely boring.
Look, Bruce Campbell probably tweeted about this and brought a whole bunch of his fans on board. Sure, Sam Raimi's a great director. I love the Evil Dead property, but yeah.
Yep. So, look, it's a mammoth success. If you like your minis and you want to do some painting, and obviously if you like your Evil Dead franchise, go and have a look at it. But as far as a game goes, I can't see this being nominated for the Kenner. That's
just
for sure.
Just watch the movie again instead. Yeah. Or even watch the remake. That wasn't right.
And then, Mark, we'll do a last one for you, seeing as we indulge Trent.
Oh,
yes. We have to talk about Cryptozoic Entertainment and their little success called The Walking Dead No Sanctuary board game, which seems to be just about season one of the show. That's some of the rumours based on who are on the front cover of this box.
Yeah, well, I couldn't even pick the woman who's at the top of the picture.
Andrea?
Well, Andrea's... Oh, maybe it's comic book Andrea, because Andrea's blonde with short hair. Or shorter hair. So I don't know. And I know in there's a couple of expansions already unlocked in the stretch goals. Great to see Merle there, you know, a classic character. Look, I had a look at this. I had a look at Rado.
Yep.
Rado raved through this game. He didn't just run through it. He raved through it.
Gee,
and
that's a change for Rado.
Yes, of course.
Endorsing a Kickstarter. Really? That's not like him.
But it was...
But what did Jen think, though?
I was going to say, that was the point, is Jen apparently hates, and hate isn't a strong enough word, apparently, for how Jen feels about The Walking Dead, the TV show and the comic... Yet they played, it was only the tutorial scenario, they played through it, they went for a walk. While they were walking, Jen said, hey, when we go back, can we play that Walking Dead game again? Because I really liked it.
Well, there you go.
Speaking of Walking Dead, I don't think Jen really exists. Have we ever seen Jen on a,
we
on a,
have
on a video?
Trent.
Not
we
true,
have.
Not true.
So anyway, look, again, this is a actor, minis game. Again, Mark, you should be buying this just so that you can sit on your couch using your new Couchmate to paint your minis. And look, this is going
have
to just be...
Have you got a Couchmate?
Oh, yeah.
What's a Couchmate?
Don't you check Instagram, Trent.
No, no,
I'll show you while we listen to this track.
Is that like a stable table?
And when we come back, you're going to rant just for a change.
But when you have a cup of Horlicks before going to bed? Is that what it is?
Ah, Klaus, I love you. By M83. You are with the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3.
And I will point out, that is from this century.
Yeah? That's good, Mark.
Jimi Hendrix wasn't, I do admit that. But hey, no Kate Miller-Heidke, no Billy Bragg, no Paul Kelly, yeah. No Claire Bowditch.
And some impressive musical knowledge there. Jimi Hendrix, not from this century.
There you
there we go.
Go.
Now, just before you get into whatever it is you're talking about, I just wanted to highlight one other little Kickstarter called Tinker Bits, which are steampunk metal meeples.
What?
Now, how good would you feel turning up to your board game night with your own metal meeples? These are regulation size meeples. They come in colours, eight of those at least.
There's a regulation for the
size
of
meeples? There is a regulation.
That's the question I was gonna ask.
Yeah, definitely. Have you not been reading the rule books? These are relatively well priced. You can get a set of eight of them for $20, either one of every eight colours, or one set of eight, which is probably what you would want, so that you are always going to have your own set. I reckon they look pretty cool. And wouldn't that feel great? We've already talked about a couple of weeks ago with Scythe how good the real resources feel in your hand. Imagine owning your own personalised meeples.
They are nice and weighty. Now, look, I just want to quickly mention a place where...
Everybody knows your name.
Not that place. In fact, no one on this site knows my name. It's because they're all speaking another language generally.
Oh, this is your Russian bride site.
No. Not that one. Oh. No. This is Boîte de Joux, which is not an Israeli board gaming site. It's actually a French site.
Really?
Boîte de Joux, BOIT EAJEUX.net. It means game box.
Hmm.
And it's another one of these great internet-based sites that I have discovered, like Yukata, like Board Game Arena, but it's got some games that aren't featured anywhere else. Agricola. Alhambra. Dungeon Pets.
Hey.
I'm sure this is the site that Terry told me about, because Dungeon Pets is there. It's also got Zolkin, Deus.
Is it all in French, though?
No, of course, because it translates it to English for
cool.
you. But it does seem like the majority of players are European-based, where I think most of the Yukata players are also European-based. And in fact, on Board Game Arena, most of the players are European-based.
Yes.
So a lot of Europeans playing games with me and Garth and other people we know. It's a place to get your board game fun online when you can't sit down with real people.
All right.
Which is fantastic. Now, just before we go, I want to give a quick shout out to everyone who has joined and liked us on Instagram lately.
Because Instagram going hot.
Is going off. I think it's because Mark has stopped calling it Instamagram, and we are now gaining some credibility back.
And look, 10 out of 10, Mark, for the effort that you do put into that by consistently interrupting every goddamn game we play to take photos and sit there and tweak the colours before posting them when it's your go.
Just when I thought we were going to get through a whole show, Garth, without a Trent rant, There he goes. But it's Thursday, and you know what that means? We're heading off to play games. We're going to leave all of you guys and gals to play your own games and come back and listen to us again next week, because that's all the time we have. So you have a great week. Play lots of games, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
You're off, Fagnall.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.